And what does the bank see? How does it know that a payment that might be about to be made is in any way fraudulent? How does it differentiate from other payments? Suddenly going to a neobank that's based in a third jurisdiction, that payment may look odd. But the banks are having to make these decisions in microseconds. Money makes a world go round.
It makes a world go round. Welcome to The Laundry, the podcast connecting AML, compliance, and financial crime to the real world. I'm your host, Marit, CEO of Strize, and in this episode, we are asking, how can compliance professionals tackle romance fraud?
Last year in the UK, a staggering £92 million was lost.
It's called a romance scam. According to the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center, 650...
I shared my whole heart with him.
Totaling $20.9 million. That's a 65% increase from the year before.
It's very specific, a grooming process.
Absolutely charming. Handsome.
Love bombing, trauma bonding, and coercive control.
But everything he said was a lie.
I would question him, and he would say, what sort of man do you think I am?
The man I love was never real.
The lies were out of this world.
Everything's a lie.
It was his job. He was really good at his job.
It is an embarrassing thing. It is a little bit humiliating putting my story out there.
Who's this guy I've been sharing the same bed with?
He actually wrote something down to say that he owed me the £2,000.
I really want this guy caught.
And then when I was in the bank, he phoned me. He said, oh, could you make that three?
It's just the tip of the iceberg.
Many of you listening will have seen the high-profile Netflix documentaries, TikTok sagas, or the long-read articles about charming con artists using elaborate stories of private jets and imminent danger to extract life savings from their victims, all while using the cloak of affection to mask their true aims. But this isn't just the subject of true crime stories. This is real life and it's happening right now. Figures from the UK's National Fraud Intelligence Bureau revealed they received more than 8,000 reports of romance fraud in the last full financial year. That's nearly 30 victims per day. And that's just the cases where victims come forward, many feeling too embarrassed or ashamed to do so. So in today's episode, we discuss what are the biggest challenges and misconceptions around romance fraud. What solutions does the compliance industry need to prevent romance fraud taking place? And how do we develop post-fraud support that considers aspects like mental health and trauma? To dive into this topic, I'm here in London with Simon Miller, Director of Policy and Communications at Stop Scams UK, and Anna Rove, co-founder of Loveset. Welcome to The Laundry, Simon and Anna.
Thank you so much.
It's really good to be here with you. Simon, what should our listeners know about you, your background, and Stop Scams UK?
So as you've said, I'm Director of Policy and Communications at Stop Scams UK. We are an industry-led collaboration of responsible businesses who have come together to help prevent fraud of all type and scams from happening in the first instance, and also to help keep consumers safe. So I've been doing my role for about 2 years, and before that, my background was in policy and politics, so in government, and then working in the telecom sector, and I'm delighted to be here.
Thank you. And Anna, welcome. What should our listeners know about you, Loveset, and your connection to this subject?
I was a victim of catfishing, which is a different kind of romance fraud. It was an in-person one by a lawyer here in the UK. That led me into starting my organisation, Catch the Catfished, which I've been helping victims for the last 6 years now, about 75 to 100 victims a week. I found the commonality between all romance fraud victims, and that led me to Cecilia, where we then founded Loveset, which will be an umbrella organisation, hopefully national one, to support victims in every kind of way that romance fraud victims need protecting.
Thank you both for that introduction. Let's dive into the topic. So let's start by looking at all the challenges related to romance fraud. If you look at the numbers, they are quite shocking. So data reported by the BBC showed that reports on romance fraud made to action fraud across England and Wales were up 58%. In the US, 70,000 Americans fell victim to romance fraud, losing $1.3 billion in total. So the numbers are so shocking. What do you believe have led to this explosion in romance fraud, if it has so? Because fraud has been around forever, but is it technology that is enabling this? Is it our societal structures? Like, what's the story behind the numbers?
For me, it's a whole host of things. It's been lack of resources with the police to challenge what's going on. The majority of those scammers are actually overseas, out of legal jurisdiction, so it makes it very, very difficult. Technology is definitely a huge part in that. We've seen a lot of AI being used in these romance fraud scams as well now, deep fakes, voice cloning, lots and lots of different things. But what's more shocking is that percentage of fraud, or that number of victims that you've quoted there, is only a tiny percentage of what's actually happening, and they're just the ones that have reported.
Simon, what do you think is the story behind the numbers?
It's not just romance fraud that has exploded, it's fraud across the piece. It's fraud of every type and every nature. And one of the key drivers is, as I think we've just heard, is technology, the changes to technology. We are instantly available. We are bombarded by messages, be it email, be it text, be it video content, and that makes us available. And at the same time, it's not just that we are available, but we are seconds away from making very large payments through an instant payment system. And that means that then the damage done by fraud, and romance fraud in particular, is so much greater than it would have been in a pre-digital age. And I think if you overlay the fact that as a society, as a nation, as a world, we've gone through really considerable trauma, be it pandemic, be it war in Ukraine, be it what's happening now in the Middle East. And that makes us insecure and it makes us vulnerable. And that is what scammers and fraudsters prey on.
They do. They thrive on it, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I was also thinking that, you know, romance fraud in some shape or form has been around for a long time. But do you think with the society's development, more people are reporting that they feel lonely, feel isolated, people move, maybe be less connected to family and friends, that can impact why this number has exploded? People just looking for, you know, romance and being connected to other people.
I think society as a whole and the way that we live today plays a massive part, because everybody's got really busy lives. We're not connecting with people on a one-to-one level like we normally would. And busy lives, busy jobs, dating sites and social media is a really easy way to meet people. And definitely vulnerabilities are in play. It doesn't mean that a victim is a vulnerable person. It just means that at that time they have vulnerabilities around them, or we say sometimes they're situationally vulnerable. And that can be like Cecilia was, just moving to a new country without her family around her. It can be that someone's just suffered a bereavement. Anything like that can make you vulnerable to these types of scams.
I think that's exactly right. We haven't just been through a health pandemic, we're going through a pandemic of loneliness, and we know that loneliness causes all sorts of genuine harm. And at the same time, it's much easier for us, given we are so connected, to signal unintentionally and intentionally that we are lonely, that we are looking for something different, or that may not be a person, that just may be the in that then the scammers and the fraudsters then use to start a conversation and grab hold of you. Yep. And then take that further. So all of these things combine together to make it very, very easy for fraudsters in other nations to take advantage of people here in the UK and elsewhere.
Yeah.
And commit these really, really unpleasant, horrible crimes. And they are crimes.
Yeah,
and they're huge. I mean, something we're talking about, how the overseas scammers, you'd think they're at a disadvantage as far as with in-person romance fraud, that person is with you, they can read you, they can collect signals about you. But a little known fact about, you know, the overseas romance scammers, and it's only because I talk to so many victims and they open up a lot, and then they get very suspicious about everybody they're talking to. And you suddenly realise that, as well as the associated friends that come with the main character in the story that's created, whether it's children, friends, lawyers, commanders, there's also unassociated friends that are collecting information on the victim that the victim doesn't realise is connected to that scammer. And that's almost like a way in as a grooming process, where they're finding out those little bits of information. And then that grab, when the main characters get bought in, is that they know and can say things that victim's like, oh my goodness, that's just the same as me. And it starts creating that familiarity and that soulmate kind of connection very, very quickly. And that's how they operate a lot of the time.
It's shocking to hear how organized a lot of it is, because I think many people think that romance fraud is just, you know, this one person trying to defraud one other person. But as you mentioned in the beginning, it can be people overseas. And according to, you know, the Irish Examiner, they said that large organized crime gangs are actually now running these types of fraud. So we're not just looking at one person here. It's just this whole professional operation who is dedicated to examining these types of fraud. Is that the impression you've got as well through speaking to a lot of victims?
Not just the victims. I'm the kind of personality I am. If I don't know about something, I have to go and find out.
So you're speaking to the fraudsters too?
Not only speak to them, I hide in their scammer groups. So I walk.
Oh, you go undercover.
Yeah, I sit there and observe what's going on. The scammers that do this, they're known as Yahoo boys, and romance fraud isn't their only gig. It's wide scale fraud. But there is a hierarchy. So there's the newbies, as they're called, that are just starting out on their own or with a pal. They go into these groups. And then you've got sort of the middle ranking ones where you've got bosses that are recruiting into what's called the hustler's kingdom. So they will offer like lodgings in a house and they will train them, and then they will take a 10-20% cut of any cash out, as they call it. And then you've got the big organised crime, and they're run by cults. There's one called Black Axe, which is very, very well known across the globe, and they run some major fraud across the globe, such as there's human trafficking, drug trafficking, business email compromise. It's huge. And romance fraud victims get used to help launder the money of those as well.
So we also talk to the scammers, not the romance fraudsters, but we do talk to other scammers. And it is extraordinary. I think what Anna has done so well is just explain the complexity of this, the sophistication of this. These are huge organisations in many cases, operating out of call centres in often failed states, or where rule of law is not as pervasive as it is in the UK or in Western Europe. And it funds not just localised criminal activity, but really serious terror activity, drug smuggling, people smuggling, human trafficking across the globe. And this is just a very, very lucrative part of that operation. And people will be using incredibly sophisticated scripts. Yeah. You know, I think we need to get rid of this notion that we somehow fall victim. People are either identified or targeted. Sometimes it might be a simple hook. And there is, as Anna said, this huge cast of characters that makes their world utterly compelling and believable. And as you're extracted from your normality by their actions, their engagement with you, that world becomes ever more sophisticated, ever more believable, and very, very difficult to break out of.
It is. It is literally a complete fake reality. And that's what makes it so hard coming out the other side for romance fraud victims, is because that they've been gaslighted, manipulated. And, you know, Dr. Carter has now put into research, thank goodness, the parallels between that manipulation and coercive control in domestic violence relationships. And it can be seen, the parallels now. We would never, ever say to those victims that they fell for something, would we? And we don't say that people fell for a burglary. We don't say they fell for a rape, but we always victim blame by saying a victim fell for romance fraud. And that language is really, really important.
We should probably give a proper shout out to Liz Carter, because her work analysing the language of scams is utterly extraordinary. But if you read through it and you read through the language that is used by the scammers, by the frauds, it is incredibly forceful. It is very convincing. And throughout every part of it, there will be something that is either an act of compulsion, forcing you to think or behave in a certain way, hooking into your emotions, into what may be affecting your day-to-day at any given point, to drag you further into their world.
Yep. There's just a lot of power shifting, where they put responsibility onto the victim. Victim then feels compelled to be protecting the fraudster. It's really, really clever. It was that language that was used that I gripped hold of, because whether it's a natural phenomenon to the individual romance fraudster like Cecilia's, or even mine that was a master manipulator but money wasn't involved, the commonality is that narcissistic psychopathic behaviour. That was my healing process when I started learning about them, and I started reading about love bombing, or the psychopath's love hook, and the grooming process that goes on. And that's how I finally started opening my eyes to how he'd got me so hooked. These overseas fraudsters have absolutely grabbed onto and adopted that behaviour that is so well documented, and it's put into these powerful scripts that they call formats. They have a format for everything. Billing formats is where they start to extort the money in whatever scenario they're using. They have building trust formats, love poetry. It's extensive.
It's really like a professional operation doing these crimes with the ultimate goal of extracting some money. And then that's where it comes to the radar of compliance professionals and people working in bank. So Simon, romance fraud, it's a type of authorized push payment fraud where the then victim authorizes in their bank a transaction to the fraudsters. So how will we deal with that? Because in some way it's authorized in the sense that you logged in, you transferred the money, but it wasn't really authorized. You've been coerced into doing so. How should we think about that?
Yeah, so it's a really good question, isn't it? What does the bank see? How does it know that a payment that might be about to be made is in any way fraudulent? How does it differentiate from other payments? And banks are trying all the time to make these assessments, and they will be using AI and other tools to understand the types of payments that you make and what might be anomalous within that, and what might mark it as anomalous maybe that it's external, so it's to a different jurisdiction, it's to a different type of bank that's outside of normal banking circles. Because probably most of us, we make payments to the supermarket, we make payments to some friends and family, a couple of local restaurants, whatever it may be. Suddenly going to a neobank that's based in a third jurisdiction, that payment may look odd. But the banks are having to make these decisions in microseconds. So we have real-time payment system on a faster payment system in the UK, which is great and convenient if you want to make a quick payment, but it means that the window of opportunity for shutting down a potential fraud is really difficult. Yeah. And when the banks are seeking to process vast quantities of data about you and a payment that you have chosen to make, it's very difficult for them sometimes. But at the same time, huge numbers of frauds are stopped at that point as well. And we've got to keep that in mind. The system does work, it just needs to work better. And there are things that happen that will make it better.
Yeah, because that's a good point. Even though there is a lot lost to fraud, and an enormous amount is being stopped as well. So, and as you said, there are solutions in place, they just need to work better. Your data problem.
And your workflow problem.
Now it isn't your problem. Strice is your ultimate solution to streamline customer due diligence and perpetual KYC.
Transforming your AML strategy from a manual burden to an automated winner.
Nice.
With AI-centric automation at its heart, Strice fast-tracks your time to revenue.
And because we know the future is as uncertain as it is exciting,
Strice is modular by design.
Prepare for tomorrow's risks and regulations today.
Today.
With flexibility that adapts to whatever the future holds.
And best of all,
you experience value from day one. Instant use out of the box.
Visit strice.ai and try our live demo today.
Back to the show. Let's move on to the solutions, because we need to look at this with, you know, an optimistic point of mind as well, that we can implement solutions and move this forward to the benefit of, you know, the victim, and thinking about how we should do that as an industry. So, Simon, what do you think about the financial industry's response up until now in this area?
So, I've got to be very careful what I say now. Now I'm sitting with someone who probably thinks it should absolutely be better than it is. But it's improving. I think that's the first thing to say. It's also different by banks. And there are those banks who will reimburse the vast majority of customers for any loss to a fraud. There are rule changes coming. So the UK regulator, the payment systems regulator, is implementing new changes as of October this year that will mean that if you are the victim of a fraud, you will get your money back in almost every single circumstance. And there'll be huge investment that happens behind the scenes to improve systems to better protect the fraud, so the banks can then minimise their losses that they then pay out. So that's all good news. But then there's this long tail of banks where performance is not as good, where you're very unlikely to get your money back. It's great that they will be brought into those rule changes, and so they will have to change their behaviour. But what the banks really need is a better ability to see what's happening, and that means sharing data. And that sharing of data between, it's not just banks, it's with telcos, it's with tech companies, to know that something might be dodgy is really quite difficult, particularly when it's happening before an event. It's very easy after the event, because you're allowed to share data in law at that point, but beforehand it's really quite complicated. So we need changes from government to make it clear that if you're trying to prevent fraud, you can share that data. It's okay, and it's the right thing to do. And then we need to get people used to sharing that data, when for far too long they've been doing the exact opposite.
This is something that we talked about with UK Finance. We have conversations. I've got a really good working relationship with City of London Police. And we've said collaboration is the absolute key. The criminals do it brilliantly. why aren't we? And everyone is holding on to these.
That's a comment I've heard a lot as well, that the criminals are really good at sharing information and collaborating.
Yeah, they are. And up until now, everybody's wanted to hold on to their little bit of data in their box and not been happy to share. But that's the only way. If we can triangulate or more data sharing when this is going on, and also to give banks more power to say no and to pause those payments.
Exactly that. So that's what our organisation is all about, how we can encourage organisations to share that data. So how we get data into tech companies so they can remove content, data to the banks so they can stop payments being made. But a lot of it is changing the rules so they can do the right thing, which exactly as you say, Anna, how they can add a bit of grit to the system. So if something does look a bit odd, if it's a bit anomalous, they can slow that payment down and do more checks.
Yeah. And then that's where we can come in, as Love said, because when those customers are obviously in the midst, they're in complete denial about what's going on, and bank staff are not trained to deal with those kind of issues. And it can be very, very hard for them as well, even when they've got trained teams in this. If you don't understand it properly, you're never going to have the same result of bringing somebody out of it. And sometimes it can take months. But if they can signpost people to us, then we're more likely to start getting through to them, and then we can keep them safe as well as stop.
And it's about getting that little bit of a head start, isn't it? Because if you are experiencing a romance fraud, if you are the victim of a romance fraud, you've been groomed for months probably. And then those who might be able to protect your money have this millisecond window in which to act, in which to put things in place.
Yeah,
it's
very
about addressing that balance ever so slightly.
Yeah, and it's that can be hard as well. And if it is more and more professional operations running these frauds, they're probably making more sure that the money doesn't go directly to a high-risk jurisdiction. Maybe it goes through a local bank.
It goes through whole chains.
Yeah, so it's very hard to be able to stop these things. But from your perspective, if you were to talk to the compliance professional listening who might be sitting and working with transaction monitoring systems, so what are the early signs of romance fraud that the banks should look at when they look through their data?
It's looking at those payments that are unusual, isn't it? And a repetitive amount of payments going out when they wouldn't normally. So other than, like you said, there's something we talked about with Nick Perkins from NatWest, actually, when we did a panel with the gift cards in particular, which can sometimes be a precursor to larger amounts going when they're kind of testing the water, that we should perhaps go into the places that sell the gift cards and say that they have to be sold alone so that the round amounts can be picked up by the AI on the statements rather than them now being merged within a weekly shop where they're lost. But he said before that when they were sold as a separate item, the banks could then see those round payments as a flag, but it's gone. And perhaps that needs to be brought back.
So is gift card a way of...
Depending on the level of the scammer.
Yeah.
So the newbies quite often go for gift cards because they haven't got those chains in place. So they will use
them. So it's entry level.
It's almost like entry level. And then they have people that will take those cards off of them, get them changed into their local currency.
And I think it's about understanding, isn't it, that that's the start of the journey, because you're identifying those first, often small amount, anomalous payments, and then seeing them in the pattern of ever increasing, ever larger payments. Because those gift card purchases are often for quite significant sums of money, not necessarily the thousands that people can lose in these types of fraud and scams.
Absolutely.
They're not the type of gift card that you give to your aunt.
They're not.
They will be for hundreds of pounds probably as a first stage, but it's a small enough sum that it's not going to be picked up by the banks necessarily as being an odd payment. And maybe what we need is much more victim insight into their journeys, what they started to pay out on, so the banks can then take that information and say, we know what, we need to start training our AI, our algorithms, to start picking these things up a little more easily.
So a part of the solution has been to try to educate people about these scams as well. So we work with a lot of banks. I've seen a lot of banks and society as a whole, like the government, trying to inform people, be aware of these types of scams. I saw, you know, over the weekend, the 55-part series on TikTok, Who the F*** Did I Marry? And it has amassed 122 million views.
Hi, and welcome. We all know why you're here. You're here for part of the new series that I'm calling Who the F*** Did I Marry? I'm going to tell the story of how I met, dated, married, and divorced a real pathological liar.
Well, that's a little bit different, but again, it's someone who's being, you know, lied to consistently. How important is this awareness training to prevent this?
I think what you've just said about it's not the same, but actually the process that she would have gone through to start with probably was.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you're right, probably, yeah.
That whole grooming process that character would have taken her through is incredibly similar to what romance fraud victims would have gone through. But you've hit the nail on the head, and we've discussed this recently with the Met about perhaps doing a campaign, and it has to be different and it has to be put out where it's going to have impact. And actually, as much as I hate it, because it's one of the worst platforms for scammers, TikTok's a really good place to get that kind of information out there. And also on the TV, because where the police put campaigns out just on their own social media, for example, people don't go and look on.
No, and I think, again, back to this, at how society as a whole can defend ourselves against these types of crime. One woman in Atlanta in the US got 122 million views, yeah. Whereas how effective is it that government institution or a bank put out one post about it? How do you think about it?
There is now in the UK a huge national campaign backed by government, Stop Think
the
Fraud.
The Stop Think Fraud, yeah.
And that's probably completely the right message, but it's about putting it into the right context. Mm. And, you know, it may be exactly the same messaging as appropriate for the first stages in a romance fraud. Mm. It may not be for later stages, but I think what we need to get our heads around is, in a digitized world, we need to be so much more skeptical about the content that we receive, and particularly when we're not expecting it. AI makes that even more acute, because AI just enhances the speed, the capability, and the sophistication with which scams and frauds can be organized. It's also going to help keep us safe.
Yeah, because
that's a different thing.
Yeah, what do you think about AI in the romance fraud perspective? Is it more a threat or an opportunity?
It legitimizes. So one thing that was driving me insane was the campaigns that were going out saying, if they don't make a video call, then they're a scammer. Scammers have been making fake video calls for years and years and years, using a saved video from the person that they've stolen pictures from. And they will very cleverly use two devices and play them like this. And then they will claim it's a bad connection or contour long cuts out. I've even got one where they've been very clever and put a buffering circle on the saved video to make it look like it's buffering. And of course, we've now stepped up with deepfakes. And they can take just a couple of those photos and literally sit in front of a laptop and have as long a conversation as they want. And I got sent my first one from the victim's view the other day. They're not brilliant quality yet, but they will still then claim.
And the speed for which it's changing is extraordinary. So you only need now seconds of voice clips more to be able to... possibly even less now.
Maybe.
30 seconds last week, less this week.
So how do you guys think about the issue when these deepfakes become so much better that we as a society in a Western democracy where there is quite a high level of trust in society, and coming from Norway, that's definitely the case, that you on one hand go out to everyone in society as a whole saying, don't believe anything you hear or see, don't trust anyone because you might be a victim of fraud, at the same time trying to keep up trust as a value that we hold high in our society. How do we think about that going forward? How do we balance that?
It's such a good question, isn't it? Because it goes to the heart of who we are as a society. So we're on the cusp of transformational change. That's really clear. And it's always at that point, when you're on the cusp of change, that things are most difficult. We will get used to using AI all the time and interacting with it and engaging with it. But as it is new, and it's been used in different forms that sometimes threaten us, it's a bit of a dangerous point. I think it is just about developing a really clear scepticism towards content and the sources of content, about understanding whether you can trust an organisation. You know, I might choose to trust the BBC. I'm probably less likely to trust something that's been posted by someone I've never known before, but they have 2 million followers on TikTok. At the same time, I need to know that if I haven't asked for something, the content that I receive about something I haven't asked for could well be a scam or a fraud. And it's about taking that approach, and it's about taking exactly the same approach to new approaches from people that you meet online in any setting, and just asking yourself, did I ask for this? Do I trust it?
Yeah. How does it make you feel?
How does it make you feel? Getting a second opinion as well from someone you
do trust.
That's
so important, is getting a fresh pair of eyes on it. Someone to look objectively at what's going on.
I think I agree with your reasoning there on how this will evolve going forward. And a final question before we go into the quick fire round. So we have looked at a lot of different solutions, but after a romance fraud has taken place, what solutions do we need to see? I've seen some banks have hired psychologists to be the ones that, you know, when the bank tell the victim that the money is gone and all that, that they have a team in place to do that. What solutions do you think should be in place?
For us, there's a very holistic approach needed with victims. And what's very different to romance fraud against other types of fraud is the long-term support that's needed, because it's not like something where you're going to get over it in a certain amount of time. The kind of emotional manipulation victims have been through can last for years, and it's often the worst part of it compared to the finances. And when I did a little poll in the group, the little victim support group that we've got, 95% of victims actually said that it was the destruction of trust, not only in others, but in themselves. And a recent post I just put out was really high engaged with it. And for me, it still sticks. It's that learning how to trust your own instincts again after something like this happens. It's huge. So you need to have that long-term support. And for my victims, there's always an open door policy, because re-victimisation is huge, especially in romance fraud, and they're most vulnerable just as they come out of it. So there has to be support in place where they understand the risks of future threat. So getting phone numbers changed, emails changed, things like that, to make sure scammers can't have them on that horrible list that they put you on, where you can get targeted for other frauds as well. There's the emotion.
A good example of where criminals have a great information sharing.
Yeah, they absolutely do. So much information sharing. It's I'm not even going to say the name of the list because it's just vile. But they will sell that information, or they will, first of all, try to come back with other identities themselves. Yeah, it's crazy. There are other follow-up scams where they'll come back as themselves. They'll come clean and claim they want to carry on that relationship, being honest, starting again. But the problem is the victim's got such a void in their life at that point that sometimes that fills the gap, and it's a good way in.
The level of this is,
it's sickening, isn't it?
It's shocking.
Yeah. And then the prevent comes in. So you want them then to start learning about it. A lot of victims want to know about what's actually happened and how. And if they're supported the right way, they become warriors.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got such an army of victim survivors around me. They're incredible. And they become like a warrior army, and they all become scam hunters.
We've certainly got to take Anna's enthusiasm and commitment, but your idea of how you equip people just to look after themselves is so important. Mm-hmm. So getting that right, getting the aftercare right, that is so important, isn't it? But it's also about, let's get rid of the shaming of any victim. Absolutely. I mean, that's important. The language that we use around people who experience scams or the victims of scams is just wrong, and it stops people from reporting it. If it's not reported, the police never act on it, and there's no evidence that it ever happened, so it's never going to be resourced. And we've got to break those links. We've got to have better reporting, better aftercare, and stop the shaming.
Yeah, it's a huge holistic approach.
We should leave the episode with those encouraging words at the end of what we need. But before we end, let's dish out some quick fire questions for you both. So I'll say a sentence and just first short thing that comes to mind. So what is the one thing that could be done tomorrow to help tackle romance fraud more effectively? Simon, you go first.
It's got to be better education that can happen, and is encouraging people just to stop, think, pause, and check their content.
Stop, think, pause.
Yeah, and I'm in agreement with that. It's got to be better awareness raising to prevent. And I think the prevent campaign has got to be a live story that people can recognise. It's things that they can recognize.
Power of storytelling.
Yep.
It never fails. Do you believe compliance professionals are properly equipped to deal with this challenge? Anna, you go first.
Not yet, but they're getting there.
Simon?
I'd agree with that.
What should banks remember when working to help victims of romance fraud? Anna?
That they're humans, they're not just numbers, and to show empathy.
I think it's exactly that. Remembering it's not just about the money. It's all the emotional and personal devastation that sits behind it, and being really sympathetic to that.
And final one, what are the real world consequences if we can't tackle romance fraud properly and effectively?
Not a lot of people, and there aren't a lot of numbers on the wider impact to society with this. And I think if we actually had those figures in place of how it affects the not just the economy from the loss of money, but people taking time off sick from jobs, burdens on mental health support that's currently there, there's a big wider impact and it's going to get worse.
I think you've got to see this in the context of fraud more widely, which has this huge impact on all of us, our economy. Some have said it's up to £219 billion each year to the UK economy alone. Seeing it through that lens and recognising it, this is a priority, something that's got to be tackled and tackled now.
And tackled well.
That brings the spin of the laundry to an end. Simon and Anna, thank you so much for joining me. Where can people find out more about you or connect with you?
You can find me on Catch the Catfish or Love Said.
And you can find Stop Scams UK on LinkedIn or at our website, which is www.stopscamsuk.org.uk. Money makes a
world go round. And thanks to everyone for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to go check out the back catalogue and follow The Laundry on your podcast platform of choice, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. To get in touch with The Laundry team, you can comment on the Strize LinkedIn page, my LinkedIn page, or email laundry@strize.ai. Your host for this episode was me, Marit. Our producer was Matthew. Our engineers were Nicholas and Dominic. And The Laundry is proudly produced by Strize, the AML automation cloud. Your data problem and your workflow problem, now it isn't your problem. Visit strize.ai and try our live demo today. See you next time.